This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Our vision is preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And we're always all about trying to save lives and heal hearts. That's what we really do. And since we started broadcasting over 5 years ago now, it's always been our joy to be able to bring you a story of a life redeemed after abortion. That's my story, and I love to tell it. And many of the stories that we bring you are so, so different from mine. And that's why it's, as I say, it's just such a joy to be able to welcome those who are healed and restored and able to speak about the truth about abortion. And more than that, to lift up what God has done in our lives for His glory. And so joining us to share her story tonight is Donna Clifton. Donna's retired. She lives in Arkansas, and she's going to share her story that, Donna, you've also shared in some pretty public places. I understand you've testified at the Arkansas legislature.
Yes, trying to change some of the laws here in Arkansas regarding abortion.
Okay, awesome. Well, and I know that you're active in the pro-life movement, and I appreciate that. I think that that kind of service is it can take its toll. So that is something that I really admire and applaud you doing. So Donna, share with us the story and the circumstances of what led you into having an abortion experience.
Well, I was 19 years old and met this guy. We began dating, and I was saved at the time, but I can honestly say that I was not living my life for Christ. And we began dating, and about 3 months after we began dating, I became pregnant. And I immediately knew that that abortion was wrong. I was not going to have an abortion. There was no way. It was, I knew that it was morally wrong for me. I was also living on my own for the first time. I had, never been on my own and was living on my own. And when I said that I would not have an abortion, he immediately said, well, then I don't want anything to do with you. And so I was left completely alone. He would not talk with me on the phone. No one knew that I was pregnant. And so he convinced me that if I had the abortion, that everything would be okay between us, that we would continue dating and that. And so being young at 19 and on my own and not living my life the way that I know that Christ wanted me to live, I listened to his voice. I heeded his voice and rather than the voice that I know was God inside of me saying, no, don't do this. And so on January 30th of 1982, I had an abortion. And a week later, he left me. And so my life went into a huge downward spiral.
Donna, I have to interrupt you here because there are two things that just so jump out at me that I want to underline that your story has in common with so many other stories that I've heard. First of all, that you did this to preserve a relationship and then the relationship fell apart. That is the saddest story, and it has happened to so many women. I want to give you the chance to talk about that. But I also want to ask you about, to just go into a little more detail for us about how, okay, you're against it, but you made this choice. Because I think that happens very, very often, too. People don't understand that women can be very personally opposed to abortion and yet find themselves in that situation. Talk just a little bit more about that tension. And I know you've said that you bowed to him, and I'm guessing it was. You were trying to hold on to him, right? So, but just, give us a little insight into how that works because, and I say this, I want our listeners who are pro-life but who haven't experienced abortion to be able to understand this. Many times in online forums and where people are, I don't know, they, you know how it goes, Donna. People are just spouting off, and they'll say, right, you know, this, that, or the other about a woman who chooses abortion. They don't understand this dynamic at all. Talk about being against abortion yet having one.
Okay. I'm the youngest of nine children, and so, you know, children were always cherished in our family growing up. And so I always knew within my heart that I, you know, that children were extremely important, and that for me personally, abortion was murder, and that's my personal opinion of it. And when I was pregnant, what happened also is, one thing that people need to realize is that when you're not living for Christ, that Satan is going to use every tool in his arsenal to try and make you go against the things that you strongly believe. And that's exactly what happened with me. There was a young girl working with my mother at the time who was also pregnant. And my mother said something in passing that, oh, she has just ruined her life. And she wasn't being hateful or critical. She was just talking about, she knew the struggles that she would be facing as a young single mother. But my mother at the time did not know that I was pregnant. So that effectively closed the door for me telling her that I was pregnant. So, you know, and so he was the only person that I was relying on. And at the time, being 19, I thought that I was in love with him, and I thought that I could not live my life without him. And so listening to him and giving in to what he wanted me to do, for me, it was almost just something that I had to do, because that, to me at the time, was more important than how I felt about abortion. Mm-hmm. Because it was very tangible. It was very just there and part of who I was at that time. And
sure,
it was almost as if my identity was through him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was a very difficult decision, because I knew that I was going against something that I strongly, you know, believed in, but it was something that I was put in a place to where I had to choose.
Sure.
And
you know, it's interesting, Courtney, because, again, sorry to interrupt, but I think that what you've said is so important, that for us as Christians, if we're not following, you know, we there's a reason that the word says we have an armor. If we don't put it on, we're vulnerable to all sorts of sin, and we're vulnerable to all sorts of, you know, poor choices and mistakes, and to the world and its influences. And I think one thing I also really want to have the listeners take away from this is that I know a lot of the listeners of this program are beyond childbearing age, like I am. You know, I'm a grandmother already. Praise God. Thank you for that, Lord. But we, as that generation, has still such an influence on whether or not children are born. And as you say, your mother didn't have any, you know, ill intent with her comment. But, wow, we have to be so careful with what we say about, you know, a pregnancy, whether it's unintended, whatever it is. That child is always innocent. And I think that we have so much influence, and we have so much responsibility as the older generation in this, that I don't think we can just say, oh, this is a young person's game. Oh, I'm out of that, you know, I'm out of that phase of my life, et cetera, et cetera. No. Parents are often the drivers of this decision, whether, you know, tragically, as happened in your case, when your mother probably would never have endorsed that for you, and that's not what she was trying to say. But we just need to, we need to be sure that we teach our children well. So please continue with your thoughts about, you know, where we left the story. He left you. Okay, you did what he wanted, and he left. And what happened next?
I just went into a major spiral. I began drinking to the point of blacking out, just doing anything that I could to try and cope with the pain, because I had the pain of abortion, but I also had the pain of him leaving me and betraying me a week after that abortion. And So I began drinking, did not fall into the drug trap, which I know that many women do, but I did fall into the drinking trap, and to the point of blacking out, just anything that I could do to try and numb that pain. And it didn't work. It only increased my pain. And 3 years later, I ended up having to have a complete hysterectomy. So I had one pregnancy, and I chose to abort it based on words that were given to me from him that everything would be okay between us. And I have no children. That was my one and only pregnancy. That added fuel to my downward spiral. I began cutting myself. I became suicidal. I began cutting myself because it was easier to deal with physical pain than it was the emotional pain. And I was in therapy for, you know, lots of years, but they didn't know what to do with me. And I think that's one of the saddest things is because when I would tell them that I was hurting over having an abortion, they would say, okay, what else is going on with you? And just basically dismiss, because they didn't know how to handle that either, did not know how to deal with it. And I began cutting and, you know, trying to just deal with the pain any way that I could. I remember the day that I had the abortion. I lost my voice that day, not physically, but when they were asking questions, he would answer for me. And so my voice was effectively just cut. And so for 24 years, I never said really anything to anybody about having had the abortion and just lived in silence. Was absolutely terrified that if someone found out that they were going to completely reject me. I did get back into church. I went back to college. I did a 4-year program in 2.5 years. I got a degree in teaching so that I could be around children, and got back in church and began to try and work my way back to God, because I felt like that there is no way that he could forgive me for the choice that I had made.
You know, and I'm going to, again, jump in here, because one of the things that I want to give you a chance to say a little bit more about is the fact that, okay, here you are. Now you're in the aftermath. You're trying to work your way back to God, or you're starting to. And you became a teacher to be around children. I think this is one of the gestures that women and men after abortion will make to try to heal ourselves apart from God. We'll try to maybe get pregnant again, or we'll try to, do some acts of giving or something, but that are driven by attempting to right the wrong. And so I want to ask you how that worked out for you. So some people can't be around children at all. I mean, I've spoken with women who've said they never would attend a baby shower after their abortion, you know, and you hear stories like that. But, how was that for you, apart from being right with God, to put yourself into this world of being around children? Was it helpful?
I think to a degree it was helpful. But again, I'm one of those that could not attend baby showers. Being that age and, you know, working in a school, oftentimes, you know, the teachers would become pregnant and we would have baby showers. And I would often find excuses not to be able to attend. I would, you know, leave a gift, but I would not go. But being around the children, I became an aunt when I was 8 years old. So I had always been around children. You know, I had always just a really good way with kids, you know, just being able to relate to them. And so I think that helped me to kind of slip into that role that I was very comfortable with.
Sure.
And I don't. I think to an extent that it helped with my healing, but not truly. I think it just helped me to understand that people accepted me even though they didn't know. You know, children are so honest. They're so brutally honest. And, you know, just the love of a child can just be that salve that you need at times. but it did not restore my relationship with God, or, you know, that was something that I, you know, threw myself into any committee that needed someone volunteering at church. I was there, you know, I was there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, anything that needed to be done, I would do, because I felt like that was the only way that God was going to accept me, was by for him.
Yes, and I think that, you know, if you have had an abortion that you've not healed from and you've not gone and received care from an abortion recovery organization, whether it would be through a pregnancy center or one of the weekend retreats, we have so many resources at cradlemyheart.org pointing you to abortion recovery resources. But if you've not done that for yourself and you find yourself exhausted because you're serving, trying to right this wrong, I want you to take this to heart, what Donna is sharing with us here, that there's no way. It just can't work. But you also said, Donna, that you started working your way back to God. Now, that kind of work, I think, is so beneficial. Tell us about how you started on that path.
Well, at the time, I was literally trying to work my way back to God.
Right, which, okay, we know what you're saying.
And, you know, I became a master at stuffing my feelings, you know, and I would find myself Sunday mornings at the altar, many, many Sundays, you know, just pleading to God, please forgive me, please take this from me, you know, and was not feeling like he could. And it was a lack of faith on my part, because I was so sure that it was the one sin that God would never forgive people for. And so I became a master of just stuffing my feelings. And I, to the world, I looked completely normal. But inside, I was just an absolute mess. And it got to the point to where at times those feelings would bubble over, bubble to the outside. And so I would stuff him, you know, work diligently to stuff him all back down, because I didn't want anyone to know how completely and totally flawed that I was as a human. And it was, I just became such a master of keeping them stuffed that I could go to church and go through the routines and go through my daily life as if nothing were wrong. And I married when I was right before I turned 35, and my husband and I moved to a small town. We had lived in a large, you know, city, and we moved to a small town, and I actually saw this program on TV called Faces of Abortion, and I kept seeing the title for it, and I just could not bring myself to watch it. But one night, I had gone to bed, and there was nothing on TV, so I went ahead and flipped over to that, and I began seeing women sharing their testimonies of the trauma that abortion has done in their life. And it was the first time in about 24 years that I had realized that I wasn't alone. I wasn't the only one feeling this way. And so I went to the website the next day and watched testimony after testimony of women who had gone through very similar things after having an abortion, ending up having to have a hysterectomy or not being able to have children. And so I felt at that time that God was telling me it was okay. So I was just like, okay, I'm healed. And so I called the number that they gave me, which was actually the National Hotline for Abortion Recovery, and spoke with Millie Lace. And she put me in touch with Vicki Parker here. And so I went in to Vicki Parker, and I went in, and I was like, I'm ready to volunteer and help other women through this. And so when I began filling out the paperwork, I just broke down and just completely was just a mess, and realized that, you know, because she had said to me, well, have you ever been through a Bible study, you know, a healing Bible study specifically for women who have been through abortion? And I was like, no, but, you know, I'm good, and I'm ready to do this. And,
right.
You know, as I was filling out the paperwork, just became a crying mess. And so I went through the first Bible study, Forgiven and Set Free, and I got my voice back. after 24 years, I received my voice back because I realized that God does forgive me.
Let me ask you a question about that, Donna, because when you said, you know, all those years at the altar, not believing you could be forgiven because you thought it was unforgivable, I don't know if you have a Roman Catholic background. I know that many women who do have said that, you know, there may be some church teaching that led to that belief. But I believed that for a lot of years myself as well, that this is unforgivable. I thought I was going to hell before I understood the cross and Jesus Christ and the forgiveness of sins and the redemption that he won for us through his resurrection and his blood. And so, you know, where do you think that this, was this just a fear, or do you think that it was the guilt? I mean, where do you think that came from?
I think for me, a lot of it came from myself, because I was in a Baptist church at the time, and I knew that there was forgiveness at the cross of Christ. But I felt like that I was not worthy of that. Even though Christ took every sin committed in this world upon himself, I still felt like that there was no way that that could be for me because of what I had done. I just felt like, and I think a lot of it, looking back now, stemmed from the fact that I could not forgive myself.
Right. Right. And I think that, you know, there's this song that has become a real favorite of this show called My Worth Is Not in What I Own. And at the beginning of the third verse, I think the lyric says, two wonders here that I confess, my worth and my unworthiness. Right. And it's that unworthiness that drives us to the cross where we find our worth. And yet,
right.
And so that makes a lot of sense the way that you've shared it with us. So we have about 4 minutes remaining, and I want to give you a chance to talk about your activities now, because you're bearing fruit for God. And I think that this is such a beautiful thing for people to hear about, especially if you're still struggling after abortion. Maybe, you know, for years in the church, Donna, I felt like, well, I could never serve in women's ministry if they knew about my past. And boy, I don't want it to get exposed, you know, but of course, God has shown me that just as with Peter, it's not our actions that can disqualify us from ministry. It's our heart for the Lord. It's our love for Jesus that then, you know, brings about his call for us to feed his sheep and tend his lambs. So tell me about where God is placing you and how you are expressing that today.
After my Bible study, the first one that I went through, I realized that I had my voice back. And so I went back to the church where I had been trying to work my way back for all those years. And that was the very first place that I publicly shared my testimony of what I had been going through. And I was terrified because I still felt like that people were going to reject me. But it was the most loving, receptive, embracing, just acceptance that I have ever experienced. There was one gentleman that stood up with tears streaming down his face after I spoke, and, you know, just saying, we are so sorry that we didn't know, and we support you and we love you. And that was the healing that God just began in my heart, just that there are people out there who will reject you, but we can't change that. But there are so many more out there that will accept you as a flawed, broken human being who is covered by the love and the blood of Christ.
Oh, praise God. So, praise God.
You know, I shared my testimony at our state capitol here, trying to get laws changed just the law we were wanting to have put in place was that women had a right to speak for themselves. And I lost my voice that day because I wasn't given that right. He spoke for me. And from there, I actually recorded a show for Faces of Abortion, the show that had set me on the path to my healing. A year later, I recorded my testimony for that show.
Mm-hmm. Donna, I so appreciate you sharing the story, and I really want to tell you how touched I am, especially when you get to the part of your risking honesty at your church and one individual telling you how sorry and that you are loved and that you are cared for there. And this is the vision that I hope everyone listening has, whether you're the person that still needs to share the truth or whether you're the person who will be in the audience listening. We all have a role to play in bringing about healing after abortion. Donna Clifton, thank you so much for being our guest here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity.
Donna's a volunteer with Options Pregnancy Center in Arkansas, and you can learn more about her work at our website at cradlemyheart.org. Stay with us. Coming up, open phones, 1-800-811-3003. Join us, Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to when you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for joining us. We are glad that you're here, and I appreciate you making Cradle My Heart Radio part of your weekend. We need you, and we have made special arrangements for you to be able to join the conversation. That's right. The crew is ready to answer at 1-800-811-3003 and get your phone call on the air so that you can let us know tonight what you think about the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which passed the House this week. 1-800-811-3003. There have been different versions of this bill that have passed, most recently in 2015. And, of course, the Senate will have to agree. And then President Trump on Monday of this past week formally pledged his support and endorsement of this bill so that if it passes the Senate, this will become law. What it means is that abortions will be banned federally by federal law after 20 weeks. And that's based on some scientific evidence that points to the fact that the developing fetus is capable of feeling pain, and therefore the various abortion methods would be inflicting cruel and unusual punishment on a human being. People who have been objecting to protecting children at 20 weeks have first argued that the science isn't completely settled, or the science, well, Planned Parenthood said it was junk science. Some reject the science and say that no, pain doesn't happen until much later in development, and that this is just a pretext for banning all abortions. Now, I don't agree that it's a pretext. However, if we begin to treat unborn children as human beings at 20 weeks gestation, we really have to look at why making abortion legal earlier is moral, is a good thing, is beneficial for our culture, not to speak of course, the children whose lives are lost. So tell me what you think about this. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, and Town Hall published an editorial that I wrote this week on this. And really, you know, the question is, are we capable of feeling pain? That's the headline of my editorial, because if you would argue that the reason why it should be okay to take a human life is because, well, it can't even feel pain, then I don't even want to think about how you would handle individuals in a coma. There are lots of other implications as to where that point of view takes you on how we treat one another as members of the human family. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, and I would like to hear what you think about this. We'll get into some of the things that I wrote for the townhall.com editorial, but I really want to hear what you think. You know, there was, of course, a lot of controversy on Twitter over this, and in particular, one hired gun for the abortion lobby is, an abortion rights advocate, Dr. Daniel Goodman. Grossman. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Dr. Daniel Grossman. I don't wish him any disrespect. But, you know, he took to Twitter and very condescendingly tweeted to Representative, U.S. Representative Trent Franks, "Hi, Representative Trent Franks. I'm an abortion researcher and, you know, the science isn't there." So he is a clinical and public health researcher on abortion and contraception. But as a physician, he's also the director of ANSWER. And we know what ANSWER is and what ANSWER does. It's Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health. That's what their acronym stands for. It's the Warren Buffett think tank at the University of California, San Francisco, and elsewhere. That it's science for sale. The New York Times reported that. And ProPublica has published on that. We need to really carefully consider the source. 1-800-811-3003. Have you been reading about the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. And what do you think? 1-800-811-3003. When we stop and consider that at 20 weeks, children are surviving. When Roe v. Wade was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court back in 1973, they were presented scientific evidence. They were presented a case by an abortion doctor. His name was Bernard Nathanson. And he later recanted everything that he had testified to. He later left the abortion industry. He said it can't be morally justified. They're children from conception forward. And he also converted from Judaism to Christianity, and I believe was, and I know he became a Catholic before he passed away. The science in 1973, he later wrote, was so severely limited based on where it is today. And I would say even further, since Dr. Nathanson's passing, he said there were exactly 5 sources for anything on fetology when he was testifying before the Supreme Court in the run-up to the decision for Roe v. Wade. They really had no idea about fetal development. We know much more now. We know that there's separate DNA from conception forward. We know that it is a distinct living and whole human being scientifically. And so, you know, arguing over the science will never persuade some. And I think it's important, you know, that we have an objective basis for deciding whether or not something is morally acceptable. And if the science tells us that these are full members of the human family, 20-week ban is very reasonable. Again, at the time that the Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade, they said until viability, abortion should be legal. In other words, because the child was dependent upon the mother, the government had no interest in that pregnancy. The only interested parties were the woman who was pregnant and her physician, as they wrote it in the law. And as we know, it's not always a physician that's even accomplishing the abortion. Many times it's a physician's assistant. Many times in unscrupulous abortion businesses like Gosnell was running, the untrained people were taking care of business. But viability at that time was at a much later date. MICA's law has been the handle for the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act because MICA Pickering, his mother started in labor at 20 weeks. He was born at 22 weeks. He's now a healthy, happy 6-year-old. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. Love to hear your thoughts. And we do have a pro-life resource for you tonight. This is the book Forbidden Grief, The Unspoken Pain of Abortion. And this was written by Teresa Burke, who is a PhD, a psychotherapist, and founder of the Rachel's Vineyard Retreats. And she did a masterful job of putting together the research showing that abortion is damaging to women's mental health. That has become a political football. We've interviewed her. If you want to find those interviews, just search at cradlemyheart.org for Teresa Burke, B-U-R-K-E. But this is this book, Forbidden Grief, we have a revised and updated edition, by the way. This book is so helpful because on almost every page, if you're baffled about something concerning abortion emotionally, how do women possibly make that decision? You know, we heard a story tonight, a woman who said, I was pro-life all my life, and there she was, having an abortion after a man spoke for her because he had threatened he would leave if she didn't have the abortion, and then despicably he left 1 week later. You know, you'll read stories like that in Forbidden Grief, but you'll also begin to understand the emotional and spiritual and mental dynamics that go into that decision making. And if you've had an abortion, as I have, you'll find something of your story in these pages because Dr. Burke, as I say, is a clinician and she's heard many, many stories and can search out the truth of what is happening in the human heart because of her training as a therapist. She'll help you understand what goes on when there are multiple abortions and a woman truly is using it as birth control. I mean, that's something that people will say and they find it very disturbing. They can understand and give compassion to a woman who has an abortion because of a crisis situation and an unforeseen, unintended pregnancy, a birth control failure. But they simply can't understand once she's had two, three, four, or more. And Dr. Burke writes very eloquently about traumatic reenactment and what is really going on. And it isn't simply a casual idea of, if I get pregnant, I'll just go have an abortion. That's not what's happening. No one makes that decision. That's not the thought pattern that goes into it that she has been able to record and decipher in the work that she has done with women who've had those experiences. Rather, she says, what happens is that first abortion was likely very traumatic on some level. And by repeating the traumatic event by the second or third time through, a woman will say, well, I didn't feel anything that time. Maybe that first time wasn't as bad as I've told myself it was. 1-800-811-3003. So we have a copy of Forbidden Grief, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about banning abortion at 20 weeks. Some children have lived 21 and a half weeks. I think there are a couple of stories that are out there about children that are still doing well, having been born very early. But beyond that, the humanity of the developing child at that age and the possibility that they could feel pain. There's scientific evidence. We can talk about that, too. But let me hear your thoughts. 1-800-811-3003. We'll go to the phones and say hi to Jean, who's listening in North Dakota. Hey, Jean, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hi, thank you.
So hi, welcome.
I am a child development specialist and nurse practitioner, and I've worked with ultrasounds, and I've worked maternal child, and a whole bunch of different things. But I'm concerned that in this country, we don't deal with suffering, you know, and Christ said there will be suffering. And it seems like if there's suffering for the mom, the baby's aborted. If there's suffering for adolescents, they commit suicide. If they're suffering for an elderly, there's euthanasia. It's just like we can't deal with pain in any aspects of life right now. And the abortion issue, conception is life, obviously. An embryo doesn't change into a fetus, into a child of anything other than a human. And I think focusing just on pain, physical pain, is dangerous.
And I see your point. I don't think this is the be-all, end-all. And, you know, I was contacted by Rebecca Kiesling, who's very distressed that this bill has a rape exception. And I don't agree with rape exceptions either. I think this bill was a step in the right direction, but it was a flawed step for that reason. And you're right. This isn't, you know, whether or not, because, and the concern some have voiced, Gene, is, oh, well, what if the abortion industry starts offering anesthesia before the abortion? Because you can easily see that unfolding, right, if we just focus on the pain.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's many adoptive parents who have just been absolutely thrilled to get a newborn from a rape or whatever, sexual insult on the biological mother. Those children have value. God doesn't make mistakes.
Amen. Thank you, Jean. Hold on. We'll get your address and we'll send you a copy of Forbidden Grief, The Unspoken Pain of Abortion by Dr. Teresa Burke. Our number is 1-800-811-3003. It's time for a short break and then more of your calls. Join us. We're talking about the abortion ban that the House passed, making abortions illegal at 20 weeks. President Trump has pledged to sign it to law if it passes the Senate. Tell me what you think. 1-800-811-3003.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
That's our number, and our phone lines are open. We have another copy of Forbidden Grief, The Unspoken Pain of Abortion by Dr. Teresa Burke. It's a great pro-life resource to help you understand the hearts of women who've been impacted by abortion. Whether you've had an abortion yourself or you're just seeking to gain some wisdom, some insights, and some compassion and understanding toward those who've been affected by abortion, with well over 57 million abortions in the U.S. since legalization, and I saw a number this week, 57 million abortions around the world every year. There are many, many people who need your compassion if you've not yet been personally impacted by this issue. There are millions of people who need your compassion. People who feel they are not worth even belonging to a church, stepping inside of a church. The shame and the isolation run so deep. And, you know, you hear me every week, and I really thank you if you listen regularly, or if you hear me tonight saying, I had an abortion in passing, and you say, how is that possible? Is she just calloused about it? Oh, my friend, it is only through God's grace and his healing mercy that I can talk about it and that I can be free and have the joy of anticipating a reunion in heaven with that child lost to abortion. And I'll tell you one of the things that God used to break through, because we're talking tonight about the humanity of the unborn. We're talking about this bill, you know, banning abortion after 20 weeks, because at that point, fetal development indicates that the young children can feel pain, which makes it barbaric to abort them through dismemberment, because that's what happens after 20 weeks. And if it's not dismemberment, it's a shot of digoxin to the heart. These are cruel and unusual punishments to enact on other human beings. The House passed that bill. I want to know what you think of it at 1-800-811-3003. It's a flawed bill, in my opinion, because of that rape exception, as I mentioned, but it's a start. What do you think? 1-800-811-3003. While you're getting to the phone, I'll let you know that one of the things that broke through to me were the words of our Lord sung in that simple melody, whatsoever you do to the least of my children, that you do unto me. And they repeat it, right? Whatsoever you do to the least of my children, that you do unto me. There was a choir we couldn't see singing that simple melody repeatedly as the passion was being enacted for a group that I was in. And watching him die, knowing that he was dying for the least of his children, those were unknown to the whole world except for their mothers in some cases. That we do unto him. The beauty and bravery of his love broke through my broken heart and allowed me to plead guilty, finally, fully prepared to receive the sentence that I knew I deserved. And instead, he lifted my head and said, "Tell them I love them." That's the story of Jesus at the center of my abortion. And that's the only reason why I ever talk about the fact that there's an abortion in my past. 1-800-811-3003. Let's go to Sherry, who's listening in Minnesota. And Sherry, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. You want to talk about the abortion ban, the 20-week abortion ban?
Yeah, thank you. I was in college in the 70s and figured, well, I won't decide on this unless I got in the situation. And I did get in the situation. I was at the top of my game, had a new job, new car, new life, and I got pregnant. And I made the choice for life. I'm glad I did, and I hope this passes. I'm just concerned. I don't want to be set up in a situation where it can't be amended ever if they decide viability is younger. I hope that it will eventually move down to cover from birth, conception, of course, to birth. But, yes, it is a start, and I think making progress is a good thing. I just don't want it to be something that they can't amend later.
Sure, sure. Well, and I appreciate that. Have you been following this bill? And I think it was also Representative Trent Franks who introduced it in 2015. Have you been following it?
Well, not back then, but now I am. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, what persuades you? I mean, do you believe that the fetus can feel pain, or is it simply that you know that this is a human being, this is a young member of the human family, and it's a move toward justice?
Well, I guess I agree that there is a little concern that it shouldn't be just based on pain, and I wouldn't have thought about that part about anesthesia to the unborn child. I've just always felt that it was right. It's never anything else. When the zygote, you know, comes together, it becomes a human. It doesn't become anything else. I guess I've been a radical pro-lifer for a while, and
You're exactly right, Sherry, because the development is what is so important here. You know, those who would set a line as to some arbitrary point, oh, it's when a brainstem is there, oh, it's when it can, live outside the mother's womb, whatever arbitrary point they would come up with, our development as humans, we develop as humans. We're not constructed. We don't gain more humanity as we go. Everything needed for life is encoded in our DNA from the very beginning. And so you're right about that scientifically.
Publicized more. Yeah, I think that's great. I think they should publicize that more. That baby has its own unique DNA, no matter how young it is. Because I've never heard that said before.
It's
and
absolutely
true. I see the billboards
true.
That talk about heartbeats,
right.
And I think that's convincing. It has a heartbeat. It smiles. It burps. The baby burps. And I think those things will help convince people that it is indeed already a person. So I think as the viability gets younger and younger, 1 pound babies have existed.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Hold on, Sherry. We're just about out of time, so I'm going to put you on hold so we can get your address and get you a copy of Forbidden Pain or Forbidden Grief.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Yeah, we are just about out of time, but I urge you to go to townhall.com or go to our Facebook page because we've got it linked there. And in my editorial, Are We Capable of Feeling Pain? You've got a link there to the research in 2014 that showed most abortion backers, most abortion rights backers favor an abortion ban after 20 weeks. But you'll also find the New York Times story of the doctors who discovered that the fetus can feel pain. You'll find, you know, a way for you to research this and think about it scientifically. Think about when our human value begins, because if we don't have human value based on our shared human nature, there's no such thing as equal rights. This is all part of the Case for Life, and we've got a lot of resources on that at cradlemyheart.org as well. In fact, when you sign up for our email list, you get a free downloadable PDF. It puts the main arguments and the main points in one page for you. So I hope that you'll do that and take advantage of that. Thanks for thinking it through with us, and thanks for calling us, and thanks for being here. We hope that you'll be able to join us again next week. In the meantime, check at cradlemyheart.org for lots of free resources and upcoming guests as well. I'm Kim Cattola, your host, saying thanks for being with us. And join us next week. And remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.